Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture.
Kant has this very complicated way of talking about means and ends, which may have thrown you. When you first read through it, because it's got a lot of terminology. He says, the will is conceived as a faculty of determining oneself to action in accordance with the conception of certain laws. That's already kind of jargony. What your will does is your will decides what you're going to do. That's your ability to actually decide what you're going to do. And that's most what you are, in a certain sense. You are your will. You are the product of your actions, what you choose to do. Your will has certain forces acting on it, right? Desires steering you one way or another, habits that you've developed over time, places those under inclinations. What makes you actually do what you do? What makes your will do some sort of action? So this is a question about general motivation. Kant says, what serves the will is the objective ground of its self-determination is the end. Okay, so objective meaning that it can apply to more than just, you know, the single person. It applies across the board. And when we talk about a ground, what are the grounds for your action? What are the grounds for your choosing something? What's the point to it? What is the basis for it? Notice he says self-determination. You get to choose what you're going to do. That's what it means to have a will, to be able to decide for yourself. Am I going to be a jerk? Am I going to be a great guy? Am I going to lie to myself about the fact that I'm a jerk? That's all within your capacity for choice. Am I going to work towards being a great guy because I'm a jerk? Any one of these is within your capacity. And notice, the will gets to decide what the will is going to do. It's not like anything else, right? The chalk can't write on itself. The water can't drink itself. The hand, I suppose, you know, you could have a hand touching another hand, right? That's not quite the same thing. The hand does not feel itself, touch itself. Your tongue doesn't taste itself. But your will wills itself. It can take a stand on itself. When you say to yourself, boy, I need to, you know, like work on my character and quit being such a jerk to my friends, you are in effect saying, I need to change the way I will things. So the end is what we're aiming at. The end is what we're trying to achieve. And Kant says there's certain kinds of ends that can hold for all rational beings, regardless of who you are. Whereas there's other things that are subjective, right? For example, I'm tall and you're short, right? So, you know, when it comes to pant length, this is a very trivial example, I need longer pants than you do, right? And when it comes to a jacket, I need a longer jacket than you do. You don't want a longer jacket. Imagine if you were to put this on, it'd be like a tent on you, right? And it'd look very silly. You wouldn't go to the store and pick out something like this. That would not be your end. This is an end only for me and people who are built like me, or people who want to look silly. There are other things, though, like having a good character. That can be an end for me, and equally an end for you, and an end for you, and for you, all the way across the board. That's something all rational beings can. Kant doesn't use this language, but all rational beings can get behind, you say, right? And you can get behind something, you can endorse it. Now he says, that which contains the ground of the possibility of the action of which the effect is the end, this is called the means. The means is what allows the end to be realized. So when we do an action, we're doing it for some sort of goal, some sort of end, and the will has its, you know, its motive, which is to produce that end, and the action itself is a means to producing that end. I mean, again, very trivial things. I need to get dressed. Yeah, I need to be clad so as to walk around campus not in a naked state. Well, I got to actually, you know, in the morning, I got to sometime after I put on everything else, put my arm through the sleeve. And I'll put my arm through the other sleeve. That's the means to this end of wearing this jacket. If I, like kids, you know, for example, when they first start dressing themselves, do any of you have little brothers or sisters or cousins that you babysat? What happens when they first start dressing themselves? Why is it such a hassle? They try like putting their pants on their head. They start crying. Well, because they picked the wrong means to the end of actually getting dressed. I remember coming in one time with my daughter and managed to shove her arms inside the pant leg. And she had her like neck was all scrunched down. And she was like wriggling around like somehow she was going to find a neck hole. You know? There aren't neck holes in pants. That's what makes them pants. So wrong means to the end. Or to the end, yeah. And we can figure out all sorts of, you know, means to different ends. Why are we worried about this? Well, what do we actually value? Do we value the means only insofar as it leads to the end? Right? So this piece of chalk does not have any intrinsic value in itself. We can ask, what is it for? What is it for? What's its purpose? We could use it as a doorstop if we wanted, but that'd be stupid because it would break, right? What is it for? Yeah.
To write on the chalkboard.
That's pretty much it. I mean, we could use it on the sidewalk too if we're artsy and we're trying to make a political stand or cover our childhood. And any of those would be the end, right? You could eat it, I suppose, but it's not good for that sort of thing. It has a limited value. You can buy chalk. You can trade chalk on the open market. If it becomes more rare, of course, we pay more for it. You're all, supply and demand. You're all familiar with that sort of concept. Now, why do we want that? There might be a whole chain, too. You write on a chalkboard. What good is writing on the chalkboard? I can communicate information. Who cares about that? Well, I wanted to know something. So that might be your end, right? Ends have greater value. Some ends might only have value insofar as they lead to yet further ends. Is there anything that has value as an end? Here's the term that Kant uses. End in itself. That means that it's the final piece in the chain. It's where you arrive. If you came to class so that you can learn the material, so that you can pass the class, so that you can graduate from Marist, so that you can get a good job, so that you can have a good family life with your person that you pick and the children that you generate, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That last bit is the end in itself for you. If you get to that and you say, well, look, I don't have any further purposes, that's what I really, really value or want, that's the end in itself. That's the final end. Now, a lot of other people have said the final end is happiness. Bentham had said that, Mill said that, Aristotle's going to say that. Remember, Kant doesn't think it's happiness, it's something else. So what could the final end be? Again, let's think about different things that we have. So this, oddly enough, more valuable than this. How do we measure it with dollars, right? This cost, I think, like $200, $300. Coach, by the way. My wife has got good taste. This, with the case, which is, like $100, I think the phone was $500 or $600. So we say that this has greater value than this. But you could just as easily swap two of these for one of these, right? There would be an equivalence in value. Books. Books are actually a bargain, even though they're pretty expensive these days, because they communicate so much information to us. Although, of course, you can get a lot of books out on this, right? So maybe they're not so valuable anymore. What about a person? One single person, how many iPhones would you trade for? You're shaking your head. Why?
It's not a comparison.
Why not? You're on exactly the right track.
Because people have more value. I don't know, people are not inanimate.
Yeah, they not only have more value, it's a different kind of value.
Okay.
And it's not just about being animate, because then I could say, well, how many hamsters for a person? How many sheep for this guy over here? Or how many giraffes? How many earthworms do I have to collect before I can buy this person? There's something bad about that reasoning. It's that every rational being is an end in itself. It has a different kind of value. The value that it has is dignity rather than price, which means that every item like that, every human being is irreplaceable. I can't substitute in this sense for you. Nor can any one of you substitute for the other. You can't say, well, it's too bad you treated her badly. Try treating him nice the next time, and that'll make up for it. It doesn't work like that. Every human being, according to Kant, has an inherent dignity. Now, you might say, well, where does that dignity come from? Is it just sort of like just there? And, you know, where does it come from? God? You know, everybody's equal in God's eyes. That's not what Kant thinks. Kant thinks that it has to do with the fact that we are rational, and that we, as rational beings, we can, in fact, set ends for ourselves. And we can set good ends or we can set bad ends. So interestingly enough, one of the reasons why you deserve what Kant calls respect, which other things don't deserve. The chalk doesn't deserve it, the iPhone doesn't deserve it, even the dog or the cat doesn't deserve respect. You deserve respect because you are this free being which can, not always will, but can set ends for itself, which are not just satisfaction of your desires, not just, you know, meeting your inclinations, but ends for yourself that could be endorsed by other rational beings. You can be, here's another way of putting it, you deserve to be treated with respect because you can, in fact, be a moral being. You can choose with your will to do the right thing. And the right thing is what everybody else who's doing the right thing would do. So you can choose to tell the truth instead of lying. You can choose to keep your hands off of other people's stuff or to pay for it rather than stealing. You can choose, if you've made a commitment, to follow through on that commitment. You can choose to develop your capacities. You can choose to be benevolent to other people. That doesn't mean that you will, because ultimately, who decides? Given this way of understanding things. Yeah, and I can't decide for you. I force you to be benevolent. You're not really being benevolent. You're only trying to stay out of punishment's way. And that's not being benevolent for the sake of being benevolent. That's not duty for its own sake. Only you can choose duty for its own sake. And, you know, think about our common experience. Is this a very common thing that people are always doing the right thing, always choosing to do the right thing for its own sake? Never because they'll get anything out of it, or because they're worried about what people will say, or because they don't want to think of themselves as a bad person, or, you know, it's pretty common that we actually fall short of this. But the fact that you don't have to fall short of that means that you are irreplaceably valuable. Even the scumbag, like the career criminal who you got like 99% certainty that they're going to do the same thing again, even they, according to Kant, deserve to be treated as a human being with inherent dignity. He's also got some interesting thoughts about criminal law, which, you know, like, don't rule out capital punishment, and, you know, the person actually would endorse their own punishment. That's all, you know, kind of complicated stuff that we're going to skip over here. But do you see the general idea? We're not like other beings. And why are we not like other beings? Precisely because, you might say, we are able to be respected because we are capable of respecting other people and ourselves. And we do so by choosing the right end or the right motives. It's really quite an interesting thought, isn't it? Tough to live up to, though, I'll tell you that.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.